You are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the CommBank Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a senior economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by our chief economist and head of Global Economic and Markets Research, Stephen Halmerich. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Belinda.
Now, it's a very busy week ahead with the Reserve Bank of Australia announcing their decision on Tuesday. And then on Friday, we hear from them in their quarterly statement on monetary policy. Now, it's been 3 months since it updated forecasts on the Australian economy, and of course, the situation has changed significantly over the past 3 months due to the outbreak of the coronavirus and obviously a lot of government decisions to control the transmission of the virus. What are we expecting from the Reserve Bank this week in terms of their decision?
Yeah, certainly a big week for the Reserve Bank. So on Tuesday, we've got the normal board meeting. They always meet on the first Tuesday of the month. So we're not expecting any change in the stance of monetary policy after the move into very unconventional monetary policy space in early March or mid-March on the back of the COVID-19. So the cash rate will stay at 0.25%, which is the effective lower bound. The Reserve Bank will continue to target 3-year government bond yields at the cash rate, 0.25%, and operate in the Commonwealth and state government bond markets to ensure that bond yield stays down near the cash rate and the effective operation of those markets. And also the Reserve Bank is providing funding to the banking system on a 3-year fixed term at the cash rate, 0.25%. So all of that's coming on Tuesday.
And then we also hope to hear, as part of the release on Tuesday and then again on Friday, some updated economic scenarios for how the Reserve Bank thinks the Australian economy is going to perform during the COVID-19 outbreak. And what we've heard from the Reserve Bank is we expect them to publish a central scenario for how the Australian economy will perform, but also a best case and worst case scenario as well. When we look at the central scenario, it looks like that they've got the economy falling by around 10% in the first half of 2020, the unemployment rate peaking at about 10% midway through this year, and then total hours worked in the Australian economy falling by 20%. Now, one of the really interesting things in that central case scenario is their recovery plans in 2020-21. Now, they've got a much stronger economic outlook than we do. How does that central case scenario compare to our economic forecast at this point in time?
Well, for the first half of 2020, it's quite similar. So we've got a contraction in the economy of 0.4% in the first quarter and then 8.5% in the June quarter, the current quarter. So that's a significant contraction over the first half of 2020 and particularly in the June quarter. But we then have a more modest recovery through the second half of 2020 and into 2021. So we've got the economy contracting as on the whole in 2020 at minus 5%. But for 2021, we've got a recovery of just 3.2%. So that's only marginally above what you consider long-term average growth in Australia. And I think that the main difference is we expect the consumer to be very cautious on the other side of the COVID-19, even as the economy is opened up and people are allowed to move around and go to the shops and travel again, we still do think that consumers will remain very cautious. So in economic numbers, the savings rate is going to rise, so people will save more of their income rather than spend it. And we also think that cautious attitude may flow into the business sector as well. So business investment spending intentions remain quite modest. And also we know that the rate of population growth is going to be significantly lower because the borders will be closed for probably all of 2020. So immigration growth rate will roughly half the population growth rate, and that will have an impact on growth as well.
So for any economy out there in the world, there are three main sources of economic growth. It's through population growth, which you've just mentioned, participation growth, so how many people are actually in the workforce and contributing to the economy. And the third, of course, is productivity growth, which has been lacking in the Australian economy over the past few years and even over the past decade or two as well. Now, you've just released your new Vantage Point publication, and in that you did talk about how we'll need to spark economic growth through some economic reform. And I know, you know, for a number of years that the economist community in Australia has been saying that, you know, we really need a crisis to change the way things are done in the Australian economy to get that reform. What are some of the things that could be done to actually help the economic recovery and make it stronger and make the Australian economy a bit more robust?
Well, you're right in pointing out, you know, it's really the three P's that matter: population, participation and productivity. So population policy is going to be really important. As I mentioned, the level of immigration is going to decline sharply over the next couple of years, so population growth rate will be a lot slower. So I think there's a debate that needs to be had there about what type of population increase we'd like to see going forward in terms of immigration of labour, students, all sorts of, you know, different discussions about what's the right population growth rate for Australia and where would we like those people to go and what industries they should be employed in. In terms of participation, that's really about getting more people into the labour market. So things like improving female labour force participation are going to continue to be really important. So discussions around the cost of childcare, the gender pay equity, all those sectors, all those factors that have been part of the debate for a long time will certainly need to be looked at again to really try and continue to improve female labour force participation. And then in terms of productivity, you know, that can cover a wide range of things. So continued investment in infrastructure, how do we price that? How do we fund that? Taxation system, federal-state funding relations, energy policy, innovation and regulation. There's a very long list. The list kind of goes on and on. The Reserve Bank Governor has been vocal talking about this, as has the head of the Productivity Commission. So I think there's a large volume of productivity enhancing reforms that governments at all levels, policymakers, corporate sector, the labour market sector should really be looking at to improve productivity in the economy.
And I think one of the things that the COVID-19 crisis has shown is that some of us in the economy are more able to work from home. New flexible working arrangements is probably one of those areas that could really help improve a workforce participation by females. We're obviously in the middle of free childcare at the moment as well. So, you know, we are sort of testing, you know, some old boundaries in the Australian economy, and that could actually lead to some permanent changes to come through. And there are some signs that the Australian female workforce participation rate, which has been rising quite a bit over the last few years, can actually lift a little bit more. We did release some research on this last year that showed that New Zealand does have a higher participation rate than us, and also some Scandinavian countries also had a higher female workforce participation. So it can be done, and as you say, that will contribute to Australia's economic fortunes in the future. I think the infrastructure side is also really important. What we're seeing from some state governments at the moment is a focus on some key projects that could help get the economy back in track. The New South Wales government has listed around 24 projects that it's looking at quite closely. So infrastructure spending, which has been so critical in parts of the Australian economy in recent years, will continue to be that. But that's also going to come at a cost for budget numbers. And I know in your Vantage Point publication, you did talk about the budget outlook in Australia. What's the current thinking on that? And when will we next hear from the government in relation to an update on their economic thinking?
The budget has been delayed until the 6th of October. But we have recently heard from the Treasurer that he intends to make a statement to Parliament on the 12th of May, which was the original date for the budget, detailing both the economic fallout of COVID-19 and the cost of all the various government packages. And then in June, we don't know exactly what date yet, but in June the Treasurer has promised, if you like, a mini fiscal update in terms of what does the budget position look like as a result of both the COVID-19 impact on the economy and government policy. So that June statement will follow the first quarter GDP numbers, and then the government will update them. But we're expecting the budget deficit for the current year, the 1920 financial year, to be around $74 billion. That's about 3.8% of GDP. And then for next year, 2020-21, to be around $163 billion. That's about 8.6% of GDP. So now their budget deficits, the size of which we haven't seen since World War II.
And there's obviously, a lot of data still coming out in the Australian economy. This week we do get updates on retail sales and obviously the scenarios from the Reserve Bank of Australia, and all that will lead up to the first quarter GDP numbers in June and that economic statement by the Treasurer. One thing will also be interesting to note is how some of the easing in these social distancing measures are starting to feed through into the economy. One thing we have seen is an increase in the mobility in Sydney, so more people are actually starting to move about the city. And also we have started to see some easing in requirements around the housing sector as well. So a couple of the states have made it easier to have public open homes as long as people are restricted by the numbers. What else should we be looking out for to see how the Australian economy is recovering in the next month or so?
Well, I think the best place to look is going to be the CBA credit and debit card spending data. So we're in the privileged position where every week we can assess how much money people are spending through their CBA credit and debit card. So some early signs of turnaround in those spending numbers will be really significant to watch, and particularly what sectors they come in. And then equally on the income side, we can have a really good look at income flow into CBA bank accounts. Is that income coming in the form of salaries and wages, or is it coming in the form of government benefits? So we'll certainly be watching those, both the income and the spending side of CBA customers on a week-by-week basis.
And we will certainly have some of those reports coming out over the coming weeks. And now where that CBA data is cited, this refers to the bank's proprietary data, as the statistics takes into account only the bank's data. They don't reflect all trends in the market. Now, all customer data used or represented is anonymised and aggregated before analysis is used and disclosed in accordance with the group's privacy policy statement. I appreciate your time today, Stephen.
My pleasure. Thank you, Belinda.
Thank you.